Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Let's talk about the game that IGN just gave 1 out of 10 to. I can't remember the last time that they went that low on something. But the game that's on everybody's lips and not in a great way right now is The Day Before. Something that I recently put in a list of various games that, you know, it was just called 10 video games that definitely exist, because I didn't believe in The Day Before. Now that it's finally come out, something released. And this is all kind of happening in real time as we're recording this. We're doing the podcast. We're going to put this out as a news video as well. Various things are happening in regards to just how I'm going to use the word scam. A lot of people are the potential criminal activity, etc., that's been happening around this game. We'll see when all the chips finally land. But there's a lot of aspects to this, whether it be the volunteer workers that actually helped make the game across last year. They weren't paid. They were given cool rewards, participation certificates, and free codes instead.
I love cool rewards.
I know, especially when I'm making a game for someone else that they then get to cash in on. But yeah, it's worth sort of doing a very quick roundup on what the hell the Day Before is, and then I'll mention everything that we have to this point. But like I said, it is very much unfurling right now. The team behind the game, fantastic.
You know, I'm just going to say, not to interject there, but no. It's very fitting that an unfinished game doesn't have a finished word as like the development title. It's like the first warning sign was there all along.
Yeah, they couldn't even get the title out of Early Access. It was just,
who needs the A? Who even needs the A?
Not them. It's definitely not a grade A studio. But yeah, so we had volunteer workers putting the thing together across last year. There used to be a video on the developer's YouTube channel talking about volunteer culture over at Funtastic. But their YouTube channel's now been purged, along with their LinkedIn and along with their Discord, as they attempt. And they've also put a post out saying that they can no longer continue as a game developer, saying that The Day Before didn't make enough money for them to continue, and they've had to shut down. Now, it's only been 4 days, or it was 4 days when they first announced the closure, since the game's announcement, or release day, sorry. So it's only been 4 days on the market. The thing is that right now, Steam are offering refunds to everybody because it's not remotely the game that was advertised when it was first announced back in 2021. They announced it as an open-world zombie survival MMO, and it kind of just looked like The Last of Us meets The Division. There will be this big open space thing where you'd all interact with other players, and you take on zombies, hordes of zombies, with physics, and you have firefights inside different interiors. None of that stuff is in the game, but you're lucky to find one enemy every 20 minutes by the looks of it. And it's nowhere near the level of gameplay fidelity or rendering that was in those original teasers, which is leading a lot of people down the asset flip route, the idea that they would just buy the assets off the Unreal store, and you can buy various gameplay models off that store as well, like third person shooting or a loot system or whatever, and then throw that stuff together as soon as possible or as quickly as possible to essentially cash in. That largely seems to be the case, but like I said, it's all kind of unfurling right now anyway. And as it stands right now, the amount of people that were playing at launch was 38,000 players, but it's come out that they had 200,000 sales. Right now, there are over 90,000 refunds that have happened, and Steam have delisted they're listing the game, but you can't buy it anymore. It's now listed as being in early access, which it was an early access review that IGN gave a 1 out of 10. But Steam are saying that you can get a refund even if you're outside of the 2-hour playtime window, which is their standard amount of time playing, which is another nefarious thing, because in the version of The Day Before that has released, that game's intro is protracted and extremely long and full of conversations and full of little fetch quest, go over here, talk to this character, go back and do this, go set
and
up your
and
talent.
They're all named Chris.
Yeah, they're all they're all just Wasteland Chris. But it wants you to just spend time in that opening bit. And if you, I mean, I was going to try and give them the benefit of the doubt. I can't right now. But, you know, it feels like that thing where they want to make players waste time to get through that two-hour window so they can keep the money. Right now, like I said, Steam are allowing refunds regardless. But the sheer amount of stuff that's been taken down is insane. Your quick thoughts before I keep going with this, because there's more comments from the developers themselves.
Yeah, so initial thoughts, your use of the word purge earlier is hilarious because it makes it seem as if it's like some kind of Stalin-esque, like, political kind of, like, maneuver. It is just brazenly terrible. Like, yeah. I think there's a whole conversation we need to have here around, yet again, early access. We had these controversies before in the past. But the fact that this game was able to get so much publicity from, you know, like that the exclusive trailers from IGN, lots of YouTubers were hyping up this thing, basically like, wow, look at this thing. And it just kind of felt like everyone got caught up in the, like, the hysteria of, like, oh, well, wow, open world, right? like zombie game. But we've been disappointed so many times over the years, yeah. Scott. You mentioned The Division earlier on before. That demo from Ubisoft, man. The Division comparisons initially should have been setting everyone's alarm bells off because that thing didn't live up to expectations. Yeah. And, yeah, like, if this is legitimately, if there is some, you know, to give the guys, like, the developers the benefit of the doubt, if they did attempt to actually make a game here and their company has been destroyed as a result of making that game, then I'm really sorry for everyone involved in there. However, from where I'm sitting right now, it very much looks like a case of we put together a bunch of different fake demos,
yep,
to get people very, very excited. We blended together a few different genres that are in, you know, zombies are still the moment somehow, thanks to The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we can do The Division properly. Everyone seemed to like The Division. Mm-hmm. And the end result is just kind of, it's shocking. And I just find it interesting that it was able to get so much publicity. And there's kind of a conversation I guess we need to have here about, like, when outlets kind of become exclusive spaces to premiere things. You know, like kind of the discussion on, you know, video game criticism, video game kind of publishing and marketing. Does a trailer, an exclusive trailer for the day before, and again, it's all the main onus here is on the developers for making something, yeah, that, you know, isn't real, like, no. Let's be clear here. But at the same time, you know, what level of checks and balances and scrutiny needs to be in place for, you know, our big, you know, video game outlets and, like, you know, big YouTubers to basically have an exclusive trailer for this thing? Because the day before, no one would be talking about the day before if its trailer hadn't been picked up at, you know, by IGN, by different outlets, and then kind of like really just spammed everywhere by YouTubers who got very excited about it. It just feels like there needs to be a better level of scrutiny applied to this before we get it, because IGN is a huge platform, and this isn't me dunking on IGN either. Like, it's one of those things that you should be able to get an exclusive trailer from a game company for a game that actually exists. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it feels like we've whipped up a hype machine here, and the end result is that a lot of people have been duped into buying a game, which hopefully they'll all get refunded for. Mm-hmm. But it's just not a great look all around, is it?
My thing is that it's such a black mark on the idea of trust in an industry that is already so smoke and mirrors. It is also by design fundamentally not going to be it's not going to be the vision that someone set out to draw or paint or conceptualize or describe for years into development anyway. Like, God of War 2018 only came together in the last few months of development. There was a whole story that Cory Barlog talked about when they showed Shuhei Yoshida, who's one of the top brass over at PlayStation, and he walked out of the demo because it was just not coming together very well and couldn't believe that's what they were doing and everything. More so related to some of the more sort of thematic choices for the more matured version of Kratos, but also Barlog talked about how the reality of game development, you know, things don't come together till the end. You would like to think that if a studio says, hey, we have this cool ambitious project and we have the money to be able to pay you to showcase it, they don't need to necessarily, in IGN's case, do a hands-on editorial for it, but trust should exist to some degree. Go, cool, that thing looks cool. We're assuming you're not pretending the assets that you've put together to be able to make that demo, that they are representative of what the game's going to be later on. And something like this, when it all comes down and it falls apart, just means that they'll be more apprehensive for potentially ambitious projects in the future. But is that the right thing that just needs to happen? Like, obviously the go-to examples are No Man's Sky, they're Cyberpunk 2077. Both those games turned themselves around, but they took years and years. They also took money, you know, up front, which was massively the wrong thing to do. People still paid for broken products. I don't believe this is going to turn itself around. Like, you know, the response on the dev side,
there's no one left to turn it around.
No. Well, that's the thing, and it's also worth throwing in here. I said I had a little bit more to mention, that Fantastic themselves, before the game came out on December 4th, only 3 days before launch, put a statement out over on social media just saying, please don't accuse us of being scammers. We've worked on it for 5 years. The game's not an asset flip. It's not a scam. which ties in to the reality of, over on Reddit, there's a user called EpicStory1989 who's went through the laborious process of looking up every single asset in the game and comparing it to the Unreal Store, the Epic Store, and just listing all of the asset prices and saying this is how they literally paid for and made the game, complete with the dates that are associated with those assets when they were purchased, which all lines up with the last 2 to 3 years. It's not a 5-year dev cycle. In terms of, I mean, maybe there was a version of the game that was thrown out before then, whatever. But still, that overall idea of we're aiming for something, we're putting it together on the journalistic side, there should be a way to showcase the game ahead of time because it fundamentally doesn't exist yet. It can only be an early version of it. But yeah, it's kind of on the developers. And also, the way the game was listed on Steam until recently when it was taken down was that it was still listed as an open world MMO, even though the reality of the game was more of an extraction shooter with very little AI implementation in regards to the zombies. And even the servers, you could pick a server to jump into, but if it was full, there was no like queuing system. There was just a whole thing where you couldn't actually get into the game anyway. So it just seems like a whole mess of volunteer employees who weren't paid. And the reality of, at least right now, it seems like the developers themselves or whoever's at the top attempting to get away with the money that they have made before everybody gets their refunds.
Yeah, and like there was that whole thing, I believe, either earlier this year or like, it was last year when they were like, we've had to delay the game because someone's stolen the name for it or something as well. Yeah. It's just really, it's interesting how these games get picked up, because obviously, you know, we love indie games, love the idea of like, you know, something kind of generating success. It doesn't have to have like a massive publisher behind it. But it is interesting that like, when this is the textbook example of what happens when like lots of attention falls on a smaller project and it ends up kind of spiraling into the worst thing ever. Because in the best case scenario, these dudes were completely out of their depth and they made something and then they panicked and gone blah because they've had like so much interest or whatever. But the other, you know, the worst case scenario is that they've tried to like deceive people and dupe people into buying something. Either way, it's another hilariously bad release in 2020. You know, after we've had stuff like Cogskull Island, Lord of the Rings Gollum, Redfall, like it's just not very good. And I, again, like it all comes down to me, like that we, you know, YouTube and like, you know, is a great space for games to, you know, for indie games to get, you know, the name out there, for people to get interested in them. But this to me is like a really good example of like the negative effects of that when there is like zero scrutiny applied to these gameplay trailers. I mean, there was scrutiny. People were skeptical of the game when it was first released, revealed, when people were like, you know, oh, this doesn't look real. Remember Watch Dogs? Remember The Division? Remember all this? So there is that level of scrutiny. It's just not coming from where these things are being hosted. And obviously now IGN have their 1 out of 10 review, you know, fair play. The game looks terrible. By all means do that. But it just, it feels like there is something, it's kind of a weird situation for me where again, they're like it falls on the developers to make sure that this thing is real.
Yes.
But
yes.
I'm also just kind of like, how did we get so caught up in this situation where a game like The Day Before, where I don't know, like it's kind of just weird to me.
No, I think that's true. I think like if you're someone as big as IGN, you can argue that there should be a way of vetting the projects that you're showing off and not necessarily just taking the money for the sponsorship deal. And that might not be as simplistic as it is. It likely isn't anyway. But still, like I said before, like I think there is probably a way to put a game, a version of the game together that just showcases a firefight in one location and says, look at this potential interior that will later be part of an open world, and that open world just never comes together, and you know, years pass and things don't come together. All of this reminded me of Abandoned. Do you remember that from 2021?
Yes.
There was like the Silent Hill style game where you had lead creator for San Caraman was very much steering into all the Hideo Kojima Silent Hill comparisons, and then it was Kojima himself who had to get out there and just say, look, I have nothing to do with the project. It's not a secret Silent Hill game. But that thing got as far as getting an Abandoned trailer launcher on the PlayStation Store where we could all download it, everybody logged in at the same time to see the debut of what was supposed to be gameplay footage, and then it wasn't anything. It was the same teaser that had been shown, I think it was a month or two beforehand, and then Caraman had to get out there and say, look, I think his studio's called Blue Box Studios or Black Box Studios, and just say, oh, look, we've had some development issues, we're going to delay the game, we're getting there, and that thing's just slowly disappeared. The history of that particular studio, none of their games have actually ever come out. It was one of those things where they seem to always get a bunch of investor money and get a bit of buzz going. Abandoned was the one that took off the most, but they have a worse track record, at least right now than Funtastic seem to, because Funtastic at least have Prop Night, and there's a game called Wild 8 that apparently is quite, well, it released anyway. So they have previous titles that are out there. The last thing in regards to Funtastic is that right now, like I said, we're recording this as many things are breaking, is that they've changed their name on the Steam database to 8 points. Now, they've only done that for one of their games. I mentioned Wild 8 just before. If you go on the Steam listing for Wild 8, the developer now says 8 points. So I wonder, and I guess all this will shake out over time, if they're changing their name.
You think this is a Mr. Snrub situation?
Just a Funtastic logo with a little mustache on. Just feel like it's not me at all. But yeah, they've got some other business going on in regards to why they would actually change their name and what associations that brings about if the Funtastic name ends up being worth, you know, less than mud. The whole thing that comes from this as well is that idea of, you know, say the likes of IGN, you know, this is all hypothetical, the likes of IGN take some money to showcase a trailer and they put it out there. Does that then prohibit them from being a bit more hands-on with the criticisms of said trailer, or do they end up just waiting to see the finished game and getting hands-on with that and having more to talk about? Because until that point, it is a sponsorship deal, and it's not IGN are the only people who were showcasing the game. Obviously, Steam's had trailers on there too. But that's an interesting talking point in itself, of like if the sponsorship side of it is kind of just left alone, with the understanding on the consumer side that that's a work in progress, that's something that's going to lead to something further down the line, which is always a thing that I've wanted the industry to explore more myself anyway. I kind of wish that there were way more eyes on the optics of game development, with people understanding that that's not the game. Like, you need to wait until day one to know what the hell you're actually buying.
Yeah, it's like, it's nowhere near like a Kane and Lynch situation from, you know, back in the days or whatever, but it's very much a case of like, you know, PR blending together with kind of like journalistic integrity and kind of like looking at, okay, well, we're a platform for scrutiny and criticism, but most outlets at the same time, in what culture included are platforms for, like, you know, we do like a lot of PR stuff. There's a lot of sponsorships involved, you know. It's all very transparent, I think. Like, you can literally look at, like, yeah. I think for most outlets it is the case. You have to legally declare when something is sponsored. You know, people want to share when they've got their exclusives, first looks or whatever. For me, in this instance, it just comes across, when it all pans out ultimately like this, where not only, like, it's one thing, you know, having a bad game, you know, mm-hmm. come out. This is a thing that doesn't work and has already disappeared from the face of the earth after having, like, millions of eyeballs on it, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those where it's like you have something that is both a platform for trailers, PR, promotion, that sort of thing, which, again, is really cool. You can count that as a kind of journalism because you are sharing something with people and you are also, you know, getting involved and asking people or whatever if it's an interview. But for this particular instance, it does kind of, it's a difficult kind of quandary that you have here, because at the same time, it's like, well, if you think there's something that's got a lot of buzz or is going to have a lot of buzz and you think, hey, this looks cool, we should share it with people, then you want to do that. But at the same time, if, you know, a team that doesn't have that much, like, prestige about it is coming about and basically being like, here's a bunch of money to share our game, but at the same time, you don't want to say no because you don't want to just preclude your platform from people who, or from organizations that don't have as much sway as something like mm-hmm. a massive AAA publisher with, mm-hmm. you know, a good track record of actually releasing finished games. It's just an interesting way of looking at how these things have quickly spiraled. Like, you know, we gave so much scrutiny to Watch Dogs, for Ubisoft Watch Dogs and The Division, and again CD Projekt Red with Cyberpunk 2077, and it just feels like those lessons were kind of completely forgotten about this because they were an indie team, and therefore we think, oh, that means more trust, when essentially, yeah. you know, it doesn't always work that way.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely, yeah, that's the thing, my thing's always going to come back to, like, gradients of trust, and you kind of want to, I don't know, it's like, it always makes me sad on a human level. I'm like, does every single stage of this need to be absolutely vetted? Maybe it just does, and especially for this particular industry. Like I mentioned before, you do have No Man's Sky, you have Cyberpunk, and the amount of different titles this year that are just ridiculously bad, like the Kong Skull, like Game Mill as the publisher are quickly becoming known as someone who is just, they're just farting games out.
And it's like the new LJN.
And it's like, however they can just get something over the finish line, they will. I think that for me, like the sponsorship editorial coverage side of it, to me, has always been very cut and dry. I always think it's quite interesting, or sometimes kind of funny when, like, you know, we'll get a sponsorship through for some game and we're sponsored by it, and we there's a cutaway during a video. Hey, by the way, this game's out. You can do this, 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 and it releases on December 5th. And it's like, and then it cuts back into the list, and then maybe the day after we have a video, and that same game is in there going, like, upcoming games that look really disappointing or whatever. And then in the comments, it'll be like, but you guys just said this was great. I'm like, no, we didn't. Like, that's a sponsored segment. They're paying for that. Like, to me, those lines are very, very clear. But I understand that, like, the reality of the way that comes across, the optics of it, those lines get blurred. The way that we've always handled it, at least on What Culture Gaming or whatever, is to be very cut and dry, even if it gets hilarious, that, like, something needs to be covered as a potential disappointment, but they've offered a previous sponsorship that came in before the gameplay trailer came out or whatever it is, and then we'll just do both. And that always leads to really hilarious hot water with the publishers going, oh my god, you took the money, but you also said it was bad.
Again, here, like, not to toot our horn here, those things are always layered within, you know, like, videos itself. And I think, you know, we would love to be able to upload full trailers and, like, put them on the channel, because they make, you know, they do loads of
easy way to make money.
But I don't think we were able to do that. No. But it's an interesting thing when you have that, you know, that's in the context of a video as a clear sponsorship. An exclusive first look trailer premiere. It's exciting. It's buzzworthy. You want to get in on the action. I think it also showed up on the FanFest thing that IGN does every year as well. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... There are different contexts to this, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't have outlets shouldn't be able to premiere things or have exclusives or whatever, because, you know, they need the money. We need to make this business viable. You need to have this in the way. But it is interesting how that, like, that in itself affords a lack of scrutiny, and the platform goes from being this is a thing to we are now promoting something, which is fine. This is a part of the job. This is part of the industry that we work in. But when, again, when it just pans out like this, it and again you have the 1 out of 10 review at the end of the day, which is fine. You know, you can put that in the same bracket as us, including a sponsorship, and then also being in, like, a next thing, being like, oh, it's actually looking quite disappointing or whatever. It's still forgetting the fact that you, like, contributed to a hype swell behind something that doesn't exist. So I think that is an interesting thing to look at in terms of. I don't think there are any easy answers. I don't think there are any easy answers to how you deal with it.
No, I think that's just a reality of the transactional nature of it. It's like the company comes to X outlet and says, we will pay you money to put the trailer on your particular platform. We know that you get X amount of audience views, or they tell them you have this amount of views, and they go, cool, they'll pay you that money. We take that money, the trailer goes out, and whatever happens afterwards, that's on the audience. That's on the hype generates itself. Like, unless they're going out of their way going like, hey, by the way, this is the coolest trailer this week, and you've got to see it, and they're doing that outside of the agreed sponsorship contract, then that's where it gets all weird and hairy. But it's very rare that, I mean, IGN didn't seem to go out of their way unless that FanFest thing was their own choice to spotlight the game, and then they were spotlighting something that they didn't know about. Then it gets really weird. But yeah, to me, it's cut and dry, and to a fault. Like, I've been in so many conversations with so many publishers about the reality of what we've said about a game when they've just paid us 2 months prior. You know, to do a sponsored segment, which is always a very specific cutaway. And my point is always just pointing at the advert and saying, you paid for words to be read out. That is what we did. The opinions are our own. We will then say the honest thing. But I think that's all valid. And I think that the... what was it, the Gamergate stuff back in the day? Like, that was one of the original attempts to shine a light in 50 different directions. But one of them that was at least worth the progressive side of it was the reality of games journalism, even though that thing was an absolute mess.
Yeah, no one involved in that quote-unquote movement had a clue, dude. They're like, stupid. This is a complete... I feel like this is like a different conversation. It's not like... That was like mired in like misogyny and like discrimination or whatever. You know, there is a difference.
I'm trying to extract one noodle of positivity.
Totally, totally understand. Whereas with here, it's like looking at like we've got a situation here where we've got a hype generating machine that has just spun out a pile of poo at the very end of it. And it's interesting to look at that and interrogate, okay, well, if you have a platform that is both, you know, meant to scrutinize things, it's also heavily involved in the promotional side of things. And if you look on IGN's YouTube, it is mostly like trailers and stuff, and going at it from that angle. Again, this isn't dogpile at IGN, by the way, either. No, IGN's great. We love IGN. But it's just an interesting thing to look at and think about, well, do we need to have more scrutiny in place before we give that kind of huge platform to a game like The Day Before?
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Which again, want to be double clear, it is on the developers of these games to actually make something that's real and not scam their audience. But it is just interesting how that kind of hype swell generated and how, you know, the conversation, I don't know, it's one of those.
No, I would love like a version of the industry, some alternate multiversal timeline version of this where like something like that, the original Day Before trailer gets given to IGN or GameSpot or whoever it is, and they go, cool, we'll show it, but we need to see the game running as it is right now. We want to actually be able to play it, and we'll do a hands-on session right now, and we'll then we'll track the game as it's developing. It's not that we're going to hold you to a standard, but if you want continued sponsorship or continued coverage, then we need to be able to have something that verifies the reality of what's coming together. My biggest blind spot for the industry overall is making of stuff. Like, you never see it. You just never see it. Everything is NDA'd up the wazoo, mm-hmm. and you never see the reality of how a game gets put together. And it means that people like Funtastic can take advantage of that. But also it means that you never see the reality of Crunch. You never see the reality of the art departments, the composers, and everybody else. I just want more eyes on the making of games. And I think that would clear everything up. And obviously on the audience side, you would know like, oh, okay, so they're building the third person shooter model. It kind of looks like that. And you've got the artist going like, well, we're aiming for this. And the coders, and we want to aim for this. We're pulling influence from this and that. That would be a much more honest through line delivery of a video game. Because you see making ofs of TV shows and movies, and hey, day one shooting, we're kicking off. Like, that just never happens in games. Maybe you'll get a JPEG saying we've started development, but you'd never get the hands-on, fly-on-the-wall stuff.
Yeah, and that to me is emblematic of where we are in kind of the business grind set era of multiple industries at the minute, where there is less interest from businesses to spotlight the creative process than there used to be. And again, I'm going to, as a film person, I'll use the example of like physical media. Like back in the day, special features were the thing on DVDs and Blu-rays. You would get commentaries, making of documentaries, interviews, etc. And you still get that on a lot of the boutique labels and even some of the main releases now. But even then, you know, with the rise of streaming, I think that aspect has been kind of put to one side. And you'll, even today, you'll look at some physical releases that don't really have that many special features.
Oh, no, not at all.
And, you know, special features on, like, video games. I remember back in the day, you could get, like, dev diaries and, like, fun little skits that people were doing behind the scenes. This, to me, boils down to the idea of if it's not immediately making a tangible dollar amount, then why is it worth pursuing? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is a cultural thing that we need to look at in terms of workplaces and the industry overall, where, because I think people are still interested in looking at the behind the scenes processes of these things.
So.
It's just not, because it's not like immediately profitable, it's an extra thing that is done. There's less of a willingness to document that process, which I forget, was it Double Fine who did the really good documentary? Yeah, I think you're about to say something on that.
Always, oh dude, I love the Double Fine documentaries. There's Double Fine Adventure, and I forget what you call the newest one, but they showcased how they made Broken Age, and then Double Fine Odyssey, I think it's called, or Psycho Odyssey, is how they made Psychonauts 2. Those are the best in the industry, just day by day, fly on the wall, lots of interviews, lots of footage, showing how something comes together day by day. I love the stuff that Digital Extremes have been putting together as well, about the history of Atari, where you can play through the builds of games as they came together. I love that stuff so much. And the making of Karateka came out this year as well, which is another old hidden gem kind of game. But yeah, so much more could be done in that front. I was going to mention the Game Awards when you were saying about chasing the dollar over showcasing the creative. Just super quick, but it's like that crystallizes the problem, where you have best composer, best indie game, best art direction, all handled on a sidebar while Jeff Keighley just rattles through them. And the reality of it only being about 11 minutes of award ceremonies in a three-hour show, because they have too many sponsorship dollars that they've said yes to.
I didn't stay up to watch the Game Awards, and I'm sure you've already like done a pod on it. Like,
yeah, me exactly.
But like, I just wanted to say right now, like, that from the outside looking in, just occasionally glancing over on like social media, looking at stuff that had come out of that, it looked like the most navel-gazy, most terrible awards ceremony ever. And like the idea of, like, you know, in a year where the industry has been rocked by like layoffs and lots of hardship, the fact that like people were being told to wrap things up as they were paying tribute to like deceased former colleagues and friends,
during the Baldur's Gate,
and like just groveling towards Hollywood celebrity to reel stuff off. Mm-hmm. That in itself is another thing, you know, so much of this industry is dedicated to promotion, and you could argue that award ceremonies for film and TV and music are the exact same thing, but at the same time, it feels so much more transparently aggressive in this space currently. And that in itself is frustrating. You know, it's not really the Game Awards, it's the game, you might as well call it the game adverts. Like, it's not,
it was
like,
just,
yeah.
It was a Winter Game Fest. Like, it was just what he did in the summer, but for a different time period. And like, yeah, you had, you know, Game of the Year goes to Baldur's Gate 3, but like you said, they were given 30 seconds, then it said, please wrap it up. After 15 seconds, it starts flashing, and it's like, get off the stage kind of thing. But the bigger issue with it, at least to me, is something that's been dogging gaming for decades, which is gaming's inferiority complex, which is always gaming isn't worthwhile by itself. It needs to chase movies. It needs to bring the Hollywood in and get the actors in, because that's the only way to legitimize things. And it's complete BS. Like, you know, gaming's had its own landmark releases many times over, and you can go back to the 90s, the 80s, whatever you need to. But that stuff is really, really annoying, when you said about how much time was given to just, you know, hey, we've got Timothy Chalamet, or we've got Simu Liu, or whatever. Like, great people, but like, why are we not showcasing, you know, the celebrity quote-unquote figures, the lead creatives that have brought these games together? That whole award show could have been the revival, the resurrective sort of spotlight on the industry, just saying, look, over 10,000 people have lost their jobs, but we need to celebrate the work that they did put in, and were able to put in, and just showcase the reality of gaming, not just this weird sponsorship fest where, like, sure, the trailers were fun, but it's not what we're going, in theory, it's not what we're going there.
I mean, there should be, like, I'm not saying that the Game Awards shouldn't have trailers, because I like trailers. We all love trailers. We all love a good trailer, but it just feels to me like in that situation, Jeff got the ratio of promotion to celebration, and also, you know, raising awareness of this industry completely wrong. Never more did that event feel like someone who was just a passive kind of engager in the audience than someone who is actually like able to scrutinize and be familiar with the industry or whatever. It felt so transparently, you know, game dev blazer PR. It was really annoying.
Yeah. Another thing as well is that, like, because I didn't watch it live, I've been a sick boy for the last sort of week.
Same.
Or so.
I've had the roommate.
We're on the recovery trail. We're gonna make Christmas, damn it. But yeah, I remember waking up the morning after it, and my thought process wasn't I'll see who's won. It was I'll see what they've shown, which is very, very indicative of how, you know, you go into the Game Awards now to some degree for those trailers, but I think you can do both. I think you can easily do both.
But that is the same thing, you know, on a purely pragmatic level, people are more interested in what gets announced. The recognition and whatever, and veneration of certain projects, you know, it's a good thing to have, but most people who are probably, you know, secure in their own opinions and tastes, are most looking forward to, like, they can acknowledge, oh yeah, no, it's great that people got recognized, but also what is coming next. And that is, you know, you can say that's like a shame, because it is a shame, but at the same time, I felt like most of the discussion about the award ceremony itself and like who won what was from very like people just being like, oh, I'm annoyed that Spider-Man didn't win, or I'm annoyed that this was said about this game. And it's like, you know, it's one of those where I felt like there was just a whole dark cloud cast over that show.
I think some of that is just because the idea of the talent and the awards were treated as being discarded. So all you had to talk about and get riled up about was the trailers, because that was like 95% of the show. If you actually pie charted it, it was like that was the thing, like, by far.
Yeah. So it'd be weird if the Oscars did that sort of stuff. Like, the Oscars, like, it has like their own skits, and you could argue that the quality of the ceremonies has declined massively over the past decade or whatever. But yeah, they don't. It would be weird if the Oscars was a place for movie production promotion.
Well, I thought of that, because I was like, I haven't watched the Oscars in a few years.
I mean,
it is
a place of promotion. I should clarify, that's a really dumb thing I just said. Like, it is promoting movies that have released. Yes. You know, it's getting down for the home physical media releases. It's all in excess. It's basically one last PR circuit for the movies that came out over the last year. But I certainly mean in terms of advertising future movies. You know,
well,
movies
it's almost
that are
like
upcoming.
Yeah, totally. Like, I took what you meant, what you said to mean, like, if the Oscars had more of, like, Super Bowl trailers energy.
Yes.
Where it's like, you know, you're going into it knowing that something's going to be there. I would watch more of the Oscars, in theory, if they had, hey, it's the latest trailer from A24 or whatever the hell, like, something that gets me in. That would make me watch, but I don't think it should ever come at the expense of the people actually putting it together. And I do think you can do both. I just don't think it's hard, because how much do you, especially younger audiences, and we were the same way when you're growing up experiencing video games, being wowed at just the reality of what you're controlling or seeing or whatever, and then you go, hey, by the way, that person made that from zeros and ones and they coded it like that you can easily transition that across and be like, look how much they've achieved. I think that'll be a cool way to go forward. Next news item down, 20 odd minutes in or whatever the hell we're on, it's written up over on Game Infinity, but this is taken from the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League's official Discord. Rocksteady is saying that they are planning to add an offline story mode to Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League via an update later in 2024. They've said more information will come later after the game's out, but this has already been taken by fans as an acknowledgement that game's online servers, online mode, or the servers themselves will not last very long. So it seems like the long term existence of the game will be in offline mode anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lose-lose situation for them. If they didn't put it in, then people will be like, well, you're going to consign your game to oblivion. If you do put it in, the people are going to say that, well, you have no confidence in the online service to sustain themselves. Whatever. It's the sensible decision to make. You know, no one wants to have a new Rocksteady game get lost into the ether and become unplayable simply because you can't connect to a server. You can play the entire thing single player, so there is no reason why this shouldn't be in the game. I would argue it should be there at launch. So, but you know, at least that it's coming post-launch. That is some redeemable aspect to it, I suppose. You know, I can't be mad at this decision. It's the right thing to do.
Because it definitely is.
We need to have this in there. It's just, again, it's another one of those decisions where you just kind of like, oh, why wasn't it just not like a different game to begin with anyway? But yeah, whatever.
It makes me, like, reading this, I was like, yeah, maybe I'll check that out, because then it doesn't feel dogged by all the weird imbalancing and patching and potential player exploits that you get with an online, you know, multiplayer mode, loot systems, whatever it is. If you can drill it down and be like, no, it's offline, it's, you're trying to, I don't know if they go in and rework the bosses so you don't have to fundamentally rely on multiple players, like if it's a raid boss or something like that, like there's maybe a way that the offline version is a bit more palatable in terms of you're getting a more curated experience or whatever it is that learns all the lessons from the first
From what's been... Well, it's Sean Corey then. From what's been shown off, the boss battles are traditional kind of like... You would be flying around in the city, but they look like traditional things that you could take on, you know, on your own. I don't think it's like going to be like a Destiny-style situation. At least from what I've seen of the game so far. I mean, it's one of those where it's like... It's kind of the Gotham Knights situation where it's skirting those... live service elements, but it's still, you know, completely playable as like a single player thing. So, you know, kudos to Rocksteady for actually making it, you know, single player and preservable, you know, after it comes out, because that is a good thing. We don't want games to disappear.
No, and also that means that Kevin Conroy's final performance will actually be available rather than it going away with the... If the fan base isn't there, and I guess we'll wait and see next year, at least there'll be another place that thing can live on. Let's just end talking about Mad Max. We'll talk about Mad Max in a second. I want to know what you think about GTA 6, because you went in last week.
What's the man thinking? I'm super excited. It's going to be the biggest game ever. I was literally one of those that's like, I'm one of those Rockstar fans that's like, oh, GTA isn't my favorite Rockstar series. I'm a fan of Rockstar. I prefer Red Dead. I love LA Noir. Obviously, that was developed by Team Bondi. I love the Max Payne 3 game. Everything I love about Rockstar is more transparently seen in those titles to me than what we get in GTA. That said, GTA 6 trailer looks absolutely amazing. The level of graphical fidelity and detail on display looks ridiculous. I can see a little bit more of that Red Dead influence seeping in with the character-driven Bonnie and Clyde inspired story that we've got going on with Lucia, and I forget the dude's name. Jason. And then you have like that gorgeous, you know, Vice City setting. I was listening to the Miami Vice soundtrack the other day because I'm that pumped. I dived back into GTA 5 and played a bit of GTA Online as well with my cousin, and we were doing like some different heisty things on there. So I'm fully on board. I'm very excited. It's just a good time for everyone. You know, we're getting a new GTA game. It's great for the industry. Everyone is going to have to move away because it's a giant asteroid of a game crashing down in 2025. I'm looking forward to it. I kind of see more of the different gameplay details that we're getting. I want to see how the car driving physics work. I want to see what activities you can get up to. I'm super excited, and I'm curious as well, because going back into GTA 5, it's interesting looking at that and seeing all the stuff that has aged really well, all the stuff that hasn't aged as well. And I'm curious to see how Rockstar, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 is a massive maturation moment for them as a studio. I'm excited to see how they carry that forward in here, because I really could do with less of the inane, irreverent humor, which has never really been what I like GTA 4. I much prefer, you know, the different aspects of it.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah, I'm curious about the tone. The vehicles, like you said, like I hated the way GTA 4 felt. And then when they did it in 5, they sort of fixed it. But it was like, to me, you almost had to rely on Franklin's boost thing to like navigate traffic a lot better. And it's like those little character powers, I wonder if they bring them back. And going back to GTA 5, because I re-downloaded it last week, I still hate the way that thing moves for the most part. Like when you're on foot.
Yeah, like you just float around a lot. The interaction menu as well, where you have to like press down the touchpad to like equip body armor and scran snacks so you don't die. That and stuff needs to change.
Why is right on the D-pad or whatever, like the way that you pull levers and interact with the environment? It's like one of the D-pad options. I'm like, what the hell is this, the UI? But yeah, it's like I hadn't realized how much I missed GTA or how much I'd missed open world sandbox stuff. And it started reminding me of like Sleeping Dogs and Saints Row, and like when the genre, it used to be a whole genre, and now it's like everybody just stays out the way because you're only going to get compared to GTA and you're going to fail. I'm just looking forward to another open world sandbox game.
Really, really hope, because I didn't see it in the trailer, I really hope that they bring back the dual wielding from Red Dead 2. I really want to be able to, you know, mix and match different weapons. Give me the full Arnie treatment. Give me an assault rifle in one arm and a pistol in the other, and I can just go around like fanning dudes down. I need that in my life. I need to have the John Woo fantasy, like Max Payne 3. I need to be diving through windows.
Can
you be diving through the windows? Like, and then I need to be like, you know, just blowing.
Oh, mate, I love the way Max Payne 3 feels. To me, that was the last good-feeling Rockstar game. I know that's like a blasphemous thing, because people love the slow stuff. It's just not for me. Max Payne 3 definitely had some of that weight, but I felt like he was a bit more responsive than the likes of Michael or Trevor or whatever in GTA 5, and then Arthur in Red Dead. So I'm curious, like, how much is that their signature feel now, or how much do they want it to prioritize, you know, responsiveness? Because I've also been playing Vice City, the original Vice City again, because the Definitive Editions had a bunch of patches and stuff. And so that thing is twitchy as hell, but... personally, I prefer it because at least I can respond on the fly.
Yeah.
At least I know that my inputs are being read.
I just need the gameplay to be better because, like, with Red Dead 2, it's a little bit easier because, like, you're using single shot weapons largely, and you can, like, headshot and lock on and whatever. With GTA 5, the gunplay is so repetitively aim at person, move the thumbstick up as you fire to get the headshot. We need to have a little bit more dynamism in there. Obviously, in Red Dead 2, you could, like, wound people and, like, shoot, like, disarm them and stuff. We need more of that in GTA 6. And again, like, I'm just excited to see... I'm excited to see what Rockstar what they're cooking up. I'm upset that it got leaked early because it kind of, like, not only kiboshed our plans, it's, like, a massive, like, crap moment for Rockstar. So I hope no more leaks hit them. And I'm just looking forward to seeing what they come up with. This is, like, the first time that I'm going to be involved in a proper, like, GTA launch in my professional career as someone who covers this stuff. So I'm excited about that, and I'm just excited to be able to be like, hey, I'm going to get GTA at launch because I'm old enough to get it now, and no one can tell me no.
I remember, like, yeah, I came into the industry when GTA 5 was one of the first things I wrote an article about. It was like a couple of weeks after it had launched or whatever. But the last 10 years of Rockstar have been fascinating, and then, yeah, seeing which different lessons they're going to put into the new one will be a thing. Let's talk about Mad Max, only because you picked up the Mad Max game from 2015 on a recent sale, and I love that game, so I will give that game the time of day. How are you finding it?
Yeah, it's on sale currently on the PlayStation Store for $3.99. I think the offer...
We're not sponsored by them.
No. I think the offer ends at the end of the week, so if you're curious. I mean, I watched the Furiosa trailer, so I was like, oh man, I'm in the mood for some, you know, to be shiny and chrome. So I picked up the Mad Max game because I heard you'd recommended it to me numerous occasions before.
I love it.
I heard good things. I'm about like an hour in, so I've just done the intro and stuff, and I've chosen the body, the chassis for the Magnum Opus, and I'm kind of like starting that off. So yeah,
what
it's interesting.
Beard length have you got?
I haven't actually customized the beard yet. I've only like a little bit in. So yeah, no, I don't have enough to develop like a full rounded impression. I was playing it last night and got very sleepy because I got that COVID fatigue. So I ended up watching a movie called The Driver, directed by Walter Hill, which is really, really good, by the way. You should go check it out if you haven't already. R.I.P. Mm-hmm. Ryan O'Neill. But Mad Max, yeah, I've been enjoying it. It feels very weighty. It's such a 2015 game, though. Like, going through it, I'm like, wow. If you'd asked me to, like, pinpoint the year of when this game came out, it's so obviously 2015. You got that Arkham influence with, like, the free-flow combat. But the car combat from what I've played so far seems really cool and punchy. Mm-hmm. I like the survival mechanics that they're introducing. I met a guy called Scabarus Scrotus, which is great. And I think Chum Bucket is the guy who's like your ally. If I keep on discovering more funny names over the course of the game, that $3.99 will have already, you know, justified its absence from my wallet.
Yeah, my thing with that game was always like, yes, it plays it pretty safe in terms of like you got the Arkham combat, you know, you're countering on one button. But the weight and the fact that they just give completely to that tone when you knock a dude out, like you absolutely flatten them, and some of the finishes that you get, you're doing like belly to back suplexes and clotheslines, and you're like whacking dudes with like tire irons and stuff, and it's just this really great, gritty, oily combat system that then goes across into the vehicles, and it just is that initial Mad Max tone. Like, it's so messed up, all the body horror that's kind of happening with some of the individuals and everything. I just love being in that world, and it's like, it is very simplistic to play, but I thought it was just so much fun. Like, I just absolutely loved the overall feel of it.
The car upgrade system reminds me a bunch of Black Flag's upgrade system as well, which I'm massively down for as someone who adores that game. So yeah, I'm looking forward to exploring more of it. I'm kind of just rotating between that GTA and Alan Wake Remastered, and then I'm going to replay Control, and then I'm going to get Alan Wake 2 at some point next year.
And have you, last thing for Mad Max is, have you been in a storm yet?
No, not yet, no.
Oh! You've got to take on a convoy. You've got to jump a convoy. That's how the car combat really comes to life. And then you've got to survive a storm. The storms in Mad Max are legitimately some of the best storms in game.
I do have a question. Can you get the little funny whirly bird from Mad Max 2 in it and fly around?
You cannot. You can only get ground vehicles.
Dude, honestly, that's such... You know what? If someone give me a bunch of money, right, I'm going to make a game. It's going to be the Wacky Races game for the Dreamcast, except it's Mad Max and it's on the PlayStation 5 and everyone gets to make their own Mad Max vehicle. And you'll have little flyy ones, you'll have little ground ones, big trucks, little nippy like bikes and stuff. Someone, hey,
Just do it.
Warner Brothers,
do anyone.
Get me on. I'm gonna pitch this game to them.
Yeah, do Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts with the Wacky Races IP, and then we'll all make a different
play. Oh yeah, we'll just throw the Turbo Terrific yeah. into. Is he Peter Perfect in the Turbo Terrific?
Peter Perfect. Yeah, I always love Captain Caveman. And then he was always my
Penelope
favorite.
Pit Stop. We'll get them in the Mad Max universe. We'll get them in there.
It's about time someone did. I have no way to segue this into an outro, but this has been the Wind Up. I've been Scott Tailford. That's been Ewan Patterson.
That's my best Muttley voice.
That's very good. As we survive yet another week, thank you all very much for listening, and we'll catch you throughout the week. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.